Hello, I'm Daniel Moshe, and thank you for joining me for our very first episode of Growth Drivers, the podcast for CPA firms. I have to say, we at TechGuru really wanted to knock it out of the park for our debut, and I think we succeeded. You're going to be blown away when you hear from Carl Peterson, VP of Small Firm Interests at AICPA. I find him incredibly knowledgeable and insightful, not just from the standpoint of someone who learns about firms like yours, but someone who ran his own successful CPA firm until 2014. Today we talk about why it's a great time to be a CPA and what it's like to find a niche in accounting and where the firms of the future are heading. Carl invites you to join him at the Digital CPA Conference happening in San Francisco, December 4th through 6th. Learn more about that at digitalcpa.com. Again, my name is Daniel Moshe, and I'm the founder and CEO of TechGuru, a managed IT services company focused on CPA firms. We grow accounting firms like yours into the future by making them more secure, productive, and more connected to your clients. We'll have a booth at the MNCPA conference on November 30th, so please stop by for a mobile device security checkup. And of course, if you'd like to talk about how to future-proof your CPA firm, you can reach out to us at techguruit.com. Well, let's get started. Here's my interview with Carl Peterson.
Hey, Carl.
Dan, how are you doing?
Good. Great to have you here today. So today we're going to cover a lot of things, but especially going to be focusing on insights and what's happening at the AICPA and their view on what's happening with the growing firms today. Talking about some growth strategies for CPA firms, this concept of a niche strategy, and of course, lots of technology. Before we get started, I want to remind you to visit us online at techguruit.com to learn more about what we can do to help your growing practice succeed with technology, because we care about your practice as much as you do. And now, let's get started. So, Carl, welcome, and thank you for being our guest today on our inaugural podcast. But before we get started too much, I'd just love to hear a little about you and what you do at the AICPA.
Sure. My primary role as Vice President of Small Firm Interest is really I'm the voice of small firms. Think about the firms that are out there. Everybody knows about the Big Four, Deloitte, Ernst & Young, PwC, and all those. I really represent the voice and the needs of the smaller firm, smaller practitioner. And what I do is I look at it as 360 degrees of advocacy. So I go to the firms, talk to them, find out what their issues are, make sure we understand their issues. And I advocate back then to the AICPA, to the various committees that we have, whether it's professional ethics, peer review, assurance services, executive committee, or PCPS executive committee, which is our private company practice section, and talk about the issues that small firms have, medium-sized firms are having, and make sure that the initiatives that we have are addressing their issues. At the same time, then, I go back and I'll advocate back to those firms about what we're up to, what we're doing, and how we're trying to help them.
Okay, got it. So if I understand correctly, you were in private practice yourself, and you went in about 2014, if I understand, you transitioned out of private practice to now, as you say, do the 360 advocate, be a 360 advocate for those same type of practices that you had yourself. So what prompted that move back in 2014?
You know, it was actually in the fall of 2014, and I was thinking, you know, I'm going to go through one more tax season and figure out what I'm going to do for my succession plan. You know, with a small firm and very successful, having a couple of great growth years. And, it was in the fall, and I saw this opportunity come up. I heard AICPA was doing a nationwide search to replace this person that was vice president of small firm interest. I was just kind of curious. I went on the website and saw what the different requirements were and said, wow, I have all that background, that experience. And then I thought, well, maybe I'm too old. I was 55, I think, 56 at the time, 55, I guess. And I put my name in the hat, and for whatever reason, they decided to hire me.
Do you maintain your practice today?
Or I can't. Kind of, so when I joined the AICPA, yeah, I had to relinquish. So we actually merged our practice into a larger firm.
Got it.
And so I remember meeting with Barry Malanza, who's the CEO and president of our organization, at the last interview. He said, how are things going? And I said, it's great. I said, life is good. We had a record year last year. We're on pace to have a record year this year. And he turned around and looked at me and says, what the hell do you want to do this? I think if I'm going to make a change, the time to do it is when things are going good. I said, I don't want to be in a position where I have to make a change.
Right.
So if it swoops up, great. If not, I'm happy.
So now you get the opportunity to work with countless accounting professionals. I'm curious, what do you find most exciting about being in the accounting space today?
Oh, man. The changes in technology. I mean, the changes that are happening today and how fast technology changes and where we're going with technology and the ability to grab data, big data, any data at all, to help us analyze and help our clients understand their financial transactions and where they're at. I mean, we're going beyond the compliance work, right?
Right.
The consulting advisory work is where all the fun is at. It's a great time to be a CPA in this profession and be able to take that information and just think how you can analyze it and give information to your client about how to run their business. Not just the numbers,
right,
but the impact of those numbers with big data. It's cool. Very cool.
So tell me what you think about this crazy idea. Would you agree or disagree, and to what extent do you think that this is the case, that CPA firms, modern CPA firms, are really just technology companies that happen to be focused on tax and business advice? Really, at the core, it's they're very high-tech companies.
Interesting. I think that's, if we're not there, that's where we're going. There are firms that aren't there, but I think that's absolutely probably where we're going. I tell members, you know, firms today, if you put yourselves in the shoes of your clients and look at what they're experiencing out in the world today with technology, whether it's interacting with an investment advisor or interacting with anybody else, how are they really interacting with you, and what are you providing to them that helps you stand apart? It all comes back to technology.
And different. So that is what you're saying is, the technology and the tools and how they're using those tools to connect and engage with their clients, the differentiator is the technology.
Oh my God, exactly right. And not to necessarily jump ahead in the conversation, but if you think about that piece of it, right? So you have your clients taken care of with the technology piece, and you think about, we do a top issue survey every other year, and consistently finding and retaining qualified staff, qualified talent is one of the top issues, top five issues. If you look at this and you have this technology in place for all the things that you just mentioned, younger staff are going to see that, and you're going to give them the tools that they get to use. It helps on not only recruiting, but primarily retention.
So you're not only getting them in the door, but keeping them continuing to grow personally and professionally, be able to serve their clients the best they possibly can because they've got the latest and greatest tools with automation, not to mention keeping everything secure. But so. I see you have something to say, but I have a question.
Okay. No.
I have a question. So we recently transitioned from, like QuickBooks desktop edition, kind of like housed on a, and I'm talking about Tech Guru now, we're about a $3 million company. We transitioned from QuickBooks Professional 2015 or whatever to zero online accounting. It was a change that I've been wanting to make for some time. It integrates perfectly with our enterprise application, but that was a change that we initiated on our own. And we completed on our own. And I feel like there's a disconnect when CPA firms, especially ones that offer outsourcing for bookkeeping and so forth, they're very much in the business and they're doing the books and they're supporting the company. But I see some resistance to or reticence in making recommendations to make moves like that, even though it would help provide better transparency to the leaders in the business, better ease of doing business with the firm themselves, between the CPA firm and their clients, and probably better and faster reporting and analytics, dashboarding, things that they wouldn't have. I feel like it's a missed opportunity. What's up with that?
It's that willingness to change. CPA firms historically have been on a technology side, kind of behind the curve a little bit, and they're slow to change, and willingness to change is there. What you've done with Xero, I'll tell you that the Xero platform is something that the CPAs in the United States are a little bit behind on. They're just catching up.
Yeah.
We're seeing more and more firms that are becoming Xero certified, and those firms are looking at, oh my gosh, here's a platform that I can take my clients and help them get there. But, CPA firms, I think, are just learning that that's really where the market's going, that they need to take that proactive stance. We're just historically so used to being reactionary and compliant-based, deadline-based, and we need to step away from that as technology allows us to kind of get away from the underlying basic transactional work to really providing the consulting advisory work.
So I guess, and helping several other clients make enterprise application changes over the past several years, I mean, the waters are really muddying between technology and accounting and technology and finance. Especially when it comes to the impact of purchase order systems and inventory systems, where they directly interact with the general ledger. And so I come at it from a technology standpoint, and every one of these projects that I've helped with, I've been interacting with the accounting and the CPA, not so much on the tax side as much in these cases, but especially the particularly the accounting professional. And there will be tax implications of these things, obviously. So what are you seeing in terms of where, you know, technology and accounting kind of come together? How does it work the best, and who should take the lead?
Wow. You know, I tell you that the CPA firm today should be taking that lead with their clients to be that proactive leader in saying, okay, let's look at where you're at as a business. What could you be doing, and how can we help you get there? And with technology being that driver of those changes. Because business clients today are seeing those changes all the time, and they don't want to be behind the curve, much like you. I mean, you're in technology, so it's even you're probably even driven even more than anybody else. But if you think about all the small business clients that firms have today, they're ready and willing to make those changes, but they need somebody to lead them along that path.
So that brings me to another thought, which is, especially from a technology standpoint, it's hard to be an expert on every industry's applications that they may use. And I feel like, you know, businesses get the most technology lift when they are using applications that are specific to their industry and specific to their business and business model. So it's impossible for myself as a technologist to become an expert on every piece of, you know, industry-specific enterprise software out there, as I'm sure it'd be impossible for a CPA firm. So let's talk a little about niche and the niche or industry-focused strategy, and do you feel like that interplays with this conversation around advising and how that can make a difference with helping a firm grow?
Absolutely. You know, firms today, from you look at a value standpoint, where's the value of the firm? Firms today that are very generalist, they aren't going to maintain and have that growth, you know, the trajectory that firms that are focusing on a specialized niche area have. There's so many examples that we see now across the country with firms that have focused on a particular niche industry. I know firms that are doing just microbreweries and microdistilleries, wow. And they're now not just doing it in the state they're in, but they're in multiple states, and that's where their passion is at. There's another firm that I know that said, you know what, we're going to go down this path of only focusing on, seriously, they wanted to create only a focus on restaurants, and the clients had to have 3 restaurant locations or more.
Got it.
And what they've done in a 5-year period with 12 people now on staff, they went from 0, 12 people now making grossing $6 million a year. That's $500,000 a person on that team,
so
just
forgive,
in that vertical market.
Forgive me. What is that, $500K per person, is that benchmarking, is that
kind
of best in class?
That is huge.
Top quartile?
Absolutely. It would be in the top, probably in the top 10. If you think about per person, which is everybody from the partner all the way down to the staff person working on that business. And they were so focused, and that's their niche.
So you're saying they not only said, we're going to work with restaurants, it's got to be at least 3 locations.
You know, our particular firm before, you know, if you think about, you know, future and where these firms are going, our particular firm was specializing in the real estate area. And so what happens is you have great retention with people because they're passionate about the industry that you're in. And if you have people that are passionate about the industry, and you're going to attract and retain those people, you're going to get that name and visibility within that market. So when there are real estate people looking for maybe make a change, or they're looking for a new CPA, our name always came up.
Got
competing
it.
Against even the bigger firms. But because we were focused, we often got the up.
So as you may know, TechGuru has traditionally been an IT services company for anybody, currently serving 65 companies across pretty much every industry you could imagine. And one of the reasons we decided to become niche-focused on CPA firms is, to your point, exactly what you said, which is that we are becoming the experts in the industry. When it comes down to if there happens to be a competitive situation, clients prefer to work with somebody who understands their business, understands the pain, understands their line of business applications. What do you think about that?
That's exactly right. So when you go in and you have a niche, so in our real estate industry, we understood the industry. Mm-hmm. We knew what was happening in the industry. We could talk the language that our clients wanted to talk. We didn't have to worry about anything else. That's all we focused on.
Yep.
And the client, then you can sit across the table and work with them on the other things that are impacting their business, not just the compliance work, not just the tax work, not just the financial reporting. It gets into every aspect of their business because you have that knowledge and you're specialized.
So, I mean, obviously there's going to be some resistance. Frankly, you're becoming a niche IT service provider, we're essentially putting ourselves, starting a new company. And so we always ask ourselves every year, a company moved in next door and put us out of business in a year, how'd they do it? And so the way that we answer that question is, well, if a niche provider came into each one of our clients, would there be no chance? We'd have no chance. And so it's been tough. We picked the wrong niche initially, and then we transitioned to a different one. It's kind of like we're all in, so to speak, and it feels a little bit risky. You've got our existing clients that might say, hey, what about us? And we say, of course, we love you, and we're going to continue to take great care of you. We're not going anywhere. We're not going to divest, from our current wonderful set of clients. What other, if any, resistance have you heard from this niche concept, which in many firms may be a tectonic shift in the way to do business?
You're right. It's exactly what you've experienced. When you have your existing clients and you're now going to go focus on a niche, they're very worried about what's going to happen with them. But I think if you look at who you're servicing and the growth that you want to have, having that niche does truly, the numbers show that the trajectory and value that you can have in not only in the firm, again, it goes back to retention and engagement of staff, and then also for the value of your firm when you want to continue to grow or to enter your new retirement phase. Who wants you? Nobody wants a generalist, and everybody wants that specialized market.
I think about myself as a consumer of other business-to-business services, and where I'm at is if I come across a service, a product that is specifically focused on IT managed service providers, I'm willing to pay more, put up with more hassle maybe, to get to work with someone who's an expert in my business. And this goes back to, even the early days when I thought to myself, well, the person who's providing services to a retail shop and a restaurant and, other types of businesses and a manufacturer, they don't know me. They don't know my business. And what I found was they would, they'd be trying to work with me, a service provider, low on fixed assets, a little bit higher profitability on services than you might see in a manufacturer. But, I think particularly about banks as well, where banks are particularly, especially asset-based lenders, they just didn't know, they couldn't process, they didn't know how to work with somebody like ourselves, that we have cash flow, but, we don't have a bunch of fixed assets that we could borrow against. So therefore, I feel like they really didn't do much. They weren't able to service me the way that I felt that our needs were being met, to the extent that a service provider focused on a specific niche, even on professional services, would have been able to. So let's change gears a little bit. I would love to talk about, the topic that's on everybody's mind. It's talent acquisition. It's talent retention. I'm not sure about you, but in the IT services space, we have virtually zero unemployment. And we at Tech Guru have to go, to pretty extreme measures. And frankly, I like taking care of our people, and I like maybe even like trends slightly towards paternal or parental, to the extent that we, provide, groceries and food in the office and, take care of everybody from a, health insurance standpoint and kind of go above and beyond what we would definitely beyond what we have to do. So when thinking about NIT and talent, is the CPA space, accounting space experience the same kind of talent constraints that we are? And then how do you see growing firms attracting and retaining that the best and brightest?
CPA firms have that's a big challenge of everybody today. There are a number of students in the pipeline that, are in college and universities, and when they're coming out, the market is so big that they have a lot of choices. And so, we're all scrambling for the same people. But, I go back to that, the concept of a niche practice. One, as you kind of even referred to, I think in yours, is that if you have a niche practice, as you develop that niche and you develop that expertise, you can raise your fees. And there's one of the other top issues we have with smaller firms is workload compression. We're all working this big number of hours during tax season. Well, if you can reduce the amount of clients you have, but yet have the fee income coming in, you can afford to pay that young talent to recruit them and to retain them. And it's all related to having that niche practice. So it's a big challenge for us.
What role does, when you think about kind of bringing in talent or retaining talent, does technology play with that?
I go back to my one of my original comments about putting in the technology in place to support your clients. And if you have that to where they're supported in the way, in the manner that they are accustomed to outside of your firm, staff internally are going to see that, because you're going to put in the technology in place that's going to support the staff, whether they want to be telecommuting or they're going to have quick access on their phone or their tablet, whatever technology that they're used to using, they can use to access and be productive and respond to your client needs.
Got it. So versus coming into a situation where they, you know, are using, you know, cumbersome maybe remote access or cumbersome, you know, desktop-based applications, have to come in physically to the office to access certain types of data, can't access it remotely.
When you look at Xero, your product you have, I don't know how far along you are in that path with Xero, but with Xero, you can have an app on your phone to access and look at your dashboards, do transactions, whatever you want. That's what young people need today. And you're right, the archaic version of remote access, RDP, that sort of thing. Yeah, I got to go home, I got to get my laptop, pull it out, you know, boot it up and go. Whereas you can tell, I can carry my tablet everywhere. I can access anything and everything within our organization with my tablet.
For those in our audience, RDP, remote desktop connection or remote desktop protocol, a way of accessing, you know, a computer remotely, and it kind of takes over your whole screen. And, you know, I see that that's an offering in the space, and I see it as a transitional technology. So where there's a desktop-based application, there isn't cloud or web browser-based application yet available for that business application. And the only way to do that is to deliver that application far-flung places is, you know, your home office and client sites is over an internet connection where you just literally kind of share that screen from a server to your own computer, but the application itself is running on the server, which can introduce problems with delays, slow performance, and kind of difficulty with copying and pasting information between screens. And then the other three-letter acronym that people, you know, cringe about, VPN. And yeah, so we're pretty far down the road with Xero. And the other thing that you know, these cloud-based, web browser-based applications have, in my humble opinion, you know, over those desktop-based, Windows-based applications is that they integrate is the technical term, beautifully with other, you know, business and productivity applications. We're just now rolling out an expense management app. And I guess I never thought we'd get to the point. I never, you know, like 5 years ago, I wouldn't have said like, I bet I'm going to get excited about rolling out an expense management tool. But oh my gosh, is it cool? We went with Expensify.
You did. You did. Oh my gosh, that is great.
It's really exciting. Well, with Expensify, you're familiar with it.
Yes.
It integrates perfectly with Capital One, which is our business card provider. Mm-hmm. It connects directly to Capital One. It knows whose charges on which card are which. And then each person is responsible for tagging it and documenting it, the right expense account, and then it gets approved by the manager and gets put directly into the general ledger. And I just tell you, like I said, I never thought I'd get so excited about it. It's so, so, so cool.
Well, I think CPA firms should be excited about those things as well, because if you think about Expensify or cloud-based, you know, applications that, you know, Xero and other ones and how they integrate today, another issue we have with young staff today and retaining and recruiting and retaining is work-life integration, you know,
right?
So those tools and this technology allows firms, if they're willing to, you know, be flexible and you know, be progressive, allows firms to then allow their staff people to work anytime, anywhere. As long as you're getting the work done, it shouldn't really matter. And young people today want that integration. They want to be able to do the things that they normally do at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. This thing about working, you know, 9 to 5 every day doesn't work anymore. And we have the technology is available, just like you were talking about, to do it anytime, anywhere, and instantly, too. That's one thing I like about Expensify. You know, you go and if we were to have a lunch, and I could just, you know, drop in that invoice or the receipt, and I'm reimbursed.
You take a picture of it with your...
Oh, my gosh.
And for us, like, we don't have to reimburse people much for things, but having a process so that we don't have to have our controller copying and pasting and emailing transactions and waiting for people emailing back, it just got to be really cumbersome. So I'm going to say a word here that you may not like to hear, but most CPA firms bill hourly, an hourly rate. And frankly, Tech Guru, we used to bill hourly as well. We switched to what's called managed services. So we charge a fixed fee on a monthly basis for a fixed scope of services, not unlike a cell phone program. Okay, except we don't charge all those hidden fees and overages, you know, that some providers do. Carl, my concern here, and maybe the concern of some of those in our audience, is, hey, if we set up all these integrations and automation, our clients aren't going to need us anymore. How would you respond to that?
Well, you know, a lot of those things don't take away the human element. They don't all of a sudden give this intellectual property ability of the business owner to understand what's happening. They know the transactions are happening. They know you don't have to interact and process and enter in, you know, detailed transactions because the system, the bank's downloading, you know, to Expensify or and to Xero, and all those things are happening. So what they don't have is somebody to interpret what's happening.
Got it.
So we really need that. But, you know, I have to jump on something if you don't mind. When you said something about going away from, you know, talking about hourly billing, that is true. That's how the bulk of the firms operate, is billing by the hour. But there is, we've been talking about for many, many years, even before I came to AICPA, about value billing and fixed fee billing. But now we're truly seeing the results of that. There's a medium-sized firm out of South Carolina that I was in a meeting with them, and they were just going around talking about their hourly rates, talking about their realization rates and utilization rates and all those things. Came around to him, and they said, so what's yours? And he says, don't really know.
Huh.
And he said, what are you talking about? He says, well, you know, 4 years ago, we dropped all timesheets.
Wow.
We dropped hourly billing, and we just fixed it. You know what? We want to work with you, and you want to work with us. We're going to bill you X dollars a month, whatever, just like you do here at Tech Guru. And he said, you know what? I make more money now than I've ever made. And getting away from the archaic old style of billing by the hour.
Yeah, so the way that I like to think about it at Tech Guru is kind of turns the model on its head. So, you know, we're successful here at Tech Guru when you don't have to call us.
Right? Very true. But if you want to make a call, you should feel comfortable that you're calling and provide the service that you need.
Of course, yeah. And so really that monthly monthly invoice from Tech Guru is peace of mind and confidence that your systems are going to be up and running, and you don't pay us more if they're not. And
right.
So that's the hourly model, right?
Our clients want that as well, right? Yep. They want to know, what is my cost going to be for this year?
But then for us, it's then about driving efficiency through automation and helping our clients be more successful. Because their systems are working and uptime is improved, so they can be more productive and profitable as well. So it kind of just changes the whole mentality.
It does. And it puts everything based on value.
So how widely adopted is this concept of value or fixed fee billing?
We actually we do a practice survey every year about how people are truly practicing today. And one of the things we ask about actually is, are you doing value billing and what percentage? And we break that down by firm size. The smaller the firm, the more firm, the higher the percentage of firms that are now adopting that.
Yep.
We'll actually see new firms that are starting out adopt that from day one. It is slow growth. It's probably about 10 to 15% overall if you look at the professional world.
And when you look at those 10 to 15%, are those the top performing companies? You have data on that?
Every one of those, I would say almost every one of those firms are top performing. They are making more money than they've ever made. And depending on how you want to look at it, by partner, by person.
Wow.
You know.
So I just want to say, when we transitioned to managed services, and this was many years ago, initially it was a struggle to convert our clients over to that model, and not everybody ultimately came over. And I also will say that we had to change the metrics in our business that we looked at. We had to look at our business completely differently, because now it was about how can we be as efficient as possible. More so than it was, well, bill as many hours. And admittedly, we still do track hours because we want to make sure that we internally are, you know, maintaining some profitability on an account-by-account basis. So we still look at that, but we look at a completely different set of metrics than we did before to manage the health of the business.
Many of the firms that have gone to value or fixed fee billing still do track hours and timesheets. This one is kind of a unique situation.
Got it.
It seems very successful. Interesting to see if we see other people trending that way.
Yeah.
But you do have to come up with a metric,
yep.
You know, to determine whether or not you actually have efficiencies or if you have the right staff in place. I'm sure those are all being developed today, but I don't know what those answers are yet. You know, what are those metrics to track? If you're not going to track your time,
right.
What's the metric to make sure everybody's being productive and doing a good job?
I'm not sure. We still look at that.
Yeah.
So changing focus just a little slightly here. I'd love to hear a little bit more about the AICPA itself. It's an important organization, I think, in the industry. And I would like to better understand, you know, how does the AICPA position itself to help CPA firms grow and thrive?
you know, we're really heavily into thought leadership. Every single executive committee, every single team that we have within the AICPA is pushing on thought leadership, trying to make sure that we're watching out on the horizon what's happening, how can we anticipate the needs of clients, how we can anticipate the needs of the members of firms. We have a team that is called the PCPS team, which I lead with 12 other people. And our team is...
What does that stand for?
I'm sorry, Private Company Practice Section. And PCPS then develops guidance, resources, and tools and materials to help firms manage their practice. That's our primary thing. So if you have a division and you're doing a lot of A&A work, accounting and auditing work, and financial reporting, you know, we develop tools and resources to help you with quality control. If you're on the tax side, you know, we have our tax division and it's providing tools and materials to help you on the tax side. We help you on the human capital side. What should you be doing? Should you have policies on tele? And how can we make sure you have, you know, what are the best practices in that area? If you're at the other end of the scale and you're now starting, the demographics are showing there's so many people retiring, you know, we have materials and resources and guides to help you, you know, with succession planning or mergers and acquisitions, that sort of thing. It's a wealth of information within PCPS, but our primary focus is on practice management.
Building a solid, sustainable practice.
Right, including, you know, like today, if you want to go into cybersecurity, which is a new growing area for CPA firms, you want to provide assurance services to maybe help somebody with what they're, and make sure that you're providing an opinion of whether or not the cybersecurity reporting framework that they have in place exists, you can do that. If you want to go to cybersecurity and maybe provide education, help them develop the framework, help them develop the policies and procedures and education within that business environment, that's an area that CPA firms are going into. PCPS has a cybersecurity resource toolkit to help guide you through that process.
That sounds like a lot of really valuable tools. As we're talking about niche focus and being specific, it sounds like it's a niche within a niche.
Very true.
At the AICPA. So any upcoming events or learning opportunities you have that might be valuable?
Yeah, you know, the timing of this is great because we have Digital CPA conferences December 4th through the 6th in San Francisco. And we have a number of Silicon Valley keynote speakers. Okay. So it's going to be quite the event. We've had that for, I think, 7 or 8 years. It's a well-attended conference.
And what kind of things would you expect to...
Zero will be there. Okay. QuickBooks Online will be there. A number of vendors will be there. And then we gear the topics and conversations on what's happening in CPA firms today related to technology. What can that digital CPA firm be doing and best practices and how can they move themselves forward?
So a digital CPA firm means more than just being paperless, right?
Right. Very true. Very true. We can talk about all the tools and software and applications that maybe you're in an industry that Xero doesn't really work for, QuickBooks doesn't work. That digital CPA has an understanding of what those opportunities and tools are, and that software and applications that can be integrated into the firm to help that particular niche. That's what digital CPA is all about.
Very cool. Going to try to make it. So, being that this is a Tech Guru podcast and we're all about technology, I'd love to know what is your favorite tech gadget?
Oh my gosh. So, you know, I use my tablet all the time, but gadget-wise...
And sorry, what kind of tablet do you
have? I
have
a Samsung tablet.
So it's an Android tablet.
It is, so I take my notes on there and everything. But my gadget-wise, because I don't think that's a gadget, my gadget is, with my Pixel phone, I got the Google virtual reality headset. Mm, and
nice.
I'll tell you what, it's fun to have it. If I take it, you know, sometimes I do presentations, I talk about virtual reality and augmented reality and what's happening in the industry related to that. I'll bring up my goggles. Everybody wants to use it.
That's awesome. Is there anything that you wish I'd asked you that I haven't brought up yet, Carl?
Wow. You know, I wish you had, I don't know about asking, I wish you had the answer on how we can get firms today to make the move with technology that they should be making. I had somebody call me today and said, you know, they read one of my articles on cybersecurity and they're looking at now finally going maybe to the cloud and said, wow, you know, it's finally at a point where it's not, you know, should I? It's like, wow, why haven't you?
Right.
But I wish you had all those answers or you could help get the people to make those moves.
I was hoping you had the answer actually for that one, because as much as we do talk about it, I think there's something to be said for, I think, a positive attribute, frankly, of the accounting community and the CPA community, in that there is, I think, a little bit of wanting to let and see what is the proof, what becomes proven and reliable, and that it's in fact safe and secure. place because they tend to take their data of their clients very, very seriously, and having, you know, doing quality work very, very seriously. And they, you know, I think they know that what they have now, even though it may feel arcane to the people out there that are using Xero and quote unquote on the bleeding edge, but I think that folks have been burned by technology in the past, by technology transitions, by being sold a bill of goods that they don't receive in full. And so I think it's understandable that people and leaders in the accounting space might be hesitant and slower to move. And, you know, how would you address some of those, you know, some of those concerns? And how might, maybe I might ask it this way, is how can, evaluating and looking at making changes in applications and process and maybe even hardware changes to make your firm more efficient and productive, how would you address some of those, you know, potential serious potential setbacks that come sometimes with technology?
You know, I think today, though, with technology, I think there's, you know, we certainly experienced years ago being on the bleeding edge and the cost of that.
Yep.
But I think today when you have, you know, organizations like yours, Tech Guru, that somebody can actually help you identify technology and what, you know, is real and isn't real, what opportunities are, you know, for a firm to get into, that guidance is there. And I think firms need to utilize that guidance and take advantage of that guidance.
So get help. Get some outside experts.
And the same thing is, you know, even going to the AICPA,
yep,
and looking for guidance there.
So in other words, you don't have to blaze your own trail.
Absolutely.
There have been others that have done it before you, whether it's a, you know, an IT service provider or whether it's your peers. And if I understand correctly, speaking of peers, are there peer groups that you're involved with?
Yeah. You know, they're actually, so within AICPA, we actually have a number of small firm networking groups,
okay,
medium-sized firm networking groups, and large firm networking groups. But actually, here in, even in, you know, Minneapolis-St. Paul area, there's a number of local CPA firm networking groups that get together, firms of all sizes. Some
got
of
it.
Them are here to the top 14 here in the state, and some are, you know, other sizes. But there happen to be all over the country. Every metro area I go to, I can find a networking group or peer group of firms. And that is another big advantage, is to get involved in those and find out what other people do in technology. Because you're right, somebody else has already made decisions and made some changes and experienced those headaches that you know, you talk about. And so you don't have to blaze the trail again. You don't have to do all the new things. Somebody else has already done it. You can find out what the real answer is.
So learn from the experience of others and make, you know, be able to make more of an informed decision. I think there's also be something to be said for, this is me just, you know, taking a guess here, but I wonder, and I bet that within any CPA firm, there might be a handful of clients and a handful of employees in the firm that might be more kind of cutting edge. What are your thoughts on this idea that I literally just came up with right now?
True.
With just trying some things out with, like, call it an incubator, call it a the terminology that we use in IT, a sandbox.
Absolutely.
It's a safe, it's a place to try some things out, new things with people who are willing, call it beta testing.
Right.
Have you seen any people doing that?
There's some firms that have taken their young people and let them be on a kind of a task force or committee about IT, or, you know, be the advisory group, and allowing them, you know, they allow them to test some things and let them take that passion they have and the knowledge they have, because a lot of people today are, you know, they're digital natives, I think is what
yeah.
they call them, right? That passion and experience, let them run with it. Let them do all the due diligence and legwork and find out whether or not this is really something that fits the firm. It gives them, develops a number of things, not only the technology side, develops those soft skills
yep.
That they need as they move up the ladder within the firm.
Are you talking about millennials?
No.
I happen to be a millennial. I'm kind of like on the edge of a millennial. But, you know, I would actually ask you, as we kind of start to conclude here, looking, you know, at the next generation of accounting leaders, if you were, you know, to turn back the hands of time and talk to a millennial version of yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, what would be some advice or relevant experience you might share to help for those getting started in accounting and wanting to be successful?
Yeah, don't be complacent. You know, you get into that first job in that first firm, don't be complacent. You know, share your voice, ask the questions, be involved. You know, every state has what we call a state society of CPAs, so there's Minnesota Society of CPAs. You can get involved locally that way. You can also get involved in the Rotary and get that interaction and networking skills develop through those avenues. But again, don't be complacent.
Keep learning, keep growing, share Absolutely. Your ideas, and grow your network.
Question what's happening. You know?
Got it.
Don't just accept what's happened. Don't be complacent. Ask, why are we doing that? Because I don't understand it. You know, what impact does this have on what we're doing today? What does the impact have on the clients that we're servicing? Push the envelope a little bit.
You know, Carl, as we kind of bring this home, what I think about is the responsibility that we have to the business community. I'm a technologist, and your field, CPAs, both are very complex. Technology is complex. Tax and finance and accounting is very complex. And I think that part of our responsibility to the community that we serve, the business community, is to, be continuously learning and growing and improving. So I think it's on all of us to keep growing and learning through the channels that are available to us. So high quality content and thought leadership is available to us from the AICPA podcast. As you mentioned, the state and maybe even local groups around technology and accounting. So with that, I think that's kind of what we've set out to do with this podcast, mm-hmm. is share thoughts and ideas and maybe challenge you to think about new ways of doing things. So with that, Carl, I guess I just really want to thank you for being a part of this, launching this, and we're glad you came today. And hopefully you'll consider being a guest in the future.
I'd love to return. I appreciate being here today.
All right, fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Well, thank you for listening today. Once again, I'm Daniel Moshe at Tech Guru, the Caring Technology Company. Show this podcast your support when you subscribe on iTunes and leave us a raving review. This boosts our rating and helps us get the wonderful guests you love to hear on Growth Drivers, the podcast for CPA firms. If you've already checked that off your to-do list, then give us a follow on your favorite places on social media. We're at Tech Guru on Facebook and LinkedIn, and Tech Guru IT on Instagram and Twitter.